Life can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Welcome to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne-Marie DeMars. And today, we're taking a break from ranting, which we did last week, and talking about something that my daughter Rhonda said to me years ago. She was working at Gladstone's, which is a restaurant right on the ocean in Malibu. And I said, yeah, that's pretty crazy. Here you are working as a bartender. I wonder how many people walk into this bar and realize that you have an Olympic medal, that you were one of the top judo players in the world for years since you were 17 years old or so. And she looks at me and she goes, you know, Mom, everybody has a backstory. Maybe that woman at the cash register, maybe she, you know, is an amazing tap dancer, who knows? And I've thought about that often since, that it is true. Everybody does have a backstory, and we tend to get so caught up in our little bubble that we don't think about that.
Yeah, well, LA, I feel like, is especially full of backstories. But no, it, when my husband was a fellow at Stanford doing the night fellowship, which is kind of a media fellowship they had every week, one of the fellows got up and gave their backstory and gave a presentation about it.
And I'm sure that they had tragic backstories, the people at Stanford.
Excuse me. Very judgmental. Well, it was actually 20 journalists from around the world. Some of them had really amazing stories. So actually, Miss Judgmental, you are wrong.
All righty. Well, lesson learned then. So talking about people's backstories, I think it's really important, as we said, because not just in Silicon Valley or Los Angeles, but people get in this bubble where everybody's worried about, oh, what's going on with the politics in this country, or what's going on with the economy, or what's going on with IPOs, and you forget that there's this enormous number of people in the world that are in completely separate universes. It's almost like, do you ever read any of those science fiction books when you were younger that like there were parallel universes and another universe like Hitler had won or something like that?
Oh, I mean, I don't know if I've read a book about it, but I've heard people throw those things around.
Well, it's kind of almost true like it exists. And what I mean, for example, is I just read this book called I Am Hutterite. And it was by a woman who also coincidentally is a journalist, Marianne Kirkby, in Canada. And she talks about growing up in a Hutter colony. And I knew nothing about the Hutterites, that they're
kind of like Mennonites, right? I mean, kind of.
They're sort of like the older Mennonites, because there's like modern Mennonites and older Mennonites.
We saw them in Belize. I didn't realize that. Like, yeah, in Belize, they have a big Mennonite population. And yeah, they had like the modern ones that dress, like modern, and then the old ones that dress.
Right, like 400 or 500 years ago, and they all speak this language that was like from whatever the Germans spoke 400 or 500 years ago. And she was talking about how they all live communally. In other words, you might have your own house, but everybody gives and has lunch together, and everybody eats together, and everybody cooks together, and everything is owned communally. And this is somebody who grew up in, I think, Saskatchewan or Manitoba, really close to where we used to live in North Dakota. And I believe there's a bunch of Hutterites in North Dakota too. And it's just interesting, because here's this group of people living in essentially a completely parallel universe with different rules as far as ownership and dress and language. And I'd never really given it much thought.
I don't know. Every time I leave the country, especially when we go places like Latin America or something like that, I a lot of times feel like there's a totally parallel universe, because you know, there's the tourist world. You go to the tourist world, you're not really in an alternate universe. You're just kind of like in a transplanting universe, or, you know, transplant of home in a lot of ways, where everyone speaks English and everything is easy to do. And yes, we can convert it in dollars, and here's the road signs and things. But I don't know. I think, you know, for example, we went to Belize, and in a lot of ways, that's a very different universe, you know, where 20% of the roads are paved. And to get anywhere, you need to have been there 15 other times, because you'll never figure it out on your own. Or just this idea of you go into the market. And, you know, I was in Minnesota last week, and they're like home of the Super Targets, you know? So it's like ginormous Targets everywhere. And it's like, you know, I was just thinking how the week before, having been in Belize, it's like the supermarkets there are maybe a little bit bigger than the average corner store here, you know? So I don't know. I guess I can see it, but obviously I realize there are a lot of other universes on this planet that just totally are not anywhere near the realm of my little bubble.
I just wanted to comment that a while ago, a few years ago, I did this thing where every one of my blog posts on my Anne-Marie blog, which I wrote about statistics, I would have a naked mole mat featured somewhere there. And I noticed that practically every podcast you have a Target reference. We are not sponsored by Target, but hey, if you work for Target, you're listening, we're open.
And hey, if you have come from Minnesota, literally you know that everything in Minnesota revolves around a Target. It's like everywhere. I took my daughters there and they love Target as well. It's been passed down. And we were walking through though and I felt like people were looking at us like we landed from outer space because they're like, yeah, Target, Target. You know, but like Midwestern kids from Minnesota are like, what? Like, why are these kids so excited? So it is, again, part of that alternate universe.
Kind of like people from St. Louis are about White Castle hamburgers, which is just gross, White Castle, but a lot of people from St. Louis are like, oh my God, it's a White Castle, or Boston.
Dunkin' Donuts. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So wherever you're from, well, in LA, we kind of have In-N-Out.
Exactly, yeah, that's what I'm going to say. That's like, there's a reason that there's one right by the airport, and everybody from LA is like, oh my God, In-N-Out's the first thing I have to have. That and Mexican food.
So my point is that however you live and wherever you are, there are probably things that you take for granted, whether it's going to Target or, you know, eating a Dunkin' Donuts, that vast numbers of people in the world know nothing about. I remember when I taught at Jamestown College, now called the University of Jamestown, the soccer coach, when he was recruiting players to play there, they would be all stressed out. Oh my gosh, and what if I do this? And what if I go to this school? And what would these people think? And they were thinking that it was the end of the universe where they signed, you know, in one Division III school versus another, Division III versus Division II. And he had a great line. He said, you know, there are a billion people in China that know nothing about it.
Well, I always think too, like whenever I'm in the air, or like flying and the internet doesn't work or it drops out or something. And especially, I guess I've been thinking about it more because we're doing our commercialization plan for an upcoming grant. So kind of reading a lot of data about, you know, the lack of access that a lot of communities still have when it comes to the internet. And just seeing things, you know, I think it's like 68% of people who live on rural tribal lands do not have access to broadband internet and things like that. And then I'm complaining because I'm flying in the air trying to access relatively decent speed internet and it's not working. And just that kind of understanding that, yeah, exactly. There's lots of things, lots of people around the world or throughout all of history that couldn't access all the information of humanity from, you know, 35,000 feet up flying through the sky.
Well, everybody has a backstory and it's not necessarily the same as yours. So that's the same lesson. And sometimes it's really different because you're in a different country. Like when we were in Belize, we stopped and bought something because I feel like it's a poor country and I would buy things there that were made in Belize. And so we were buying like a backpack and some gifts for people to bring home that were handmade that were really cool. And the credit card reader didn't work because it was battery operated and the battery power had died and they didn't have electricity in their shop. So the woman says, well, we can go to my uncle's place. It's near here and plug it in. So we went to her uncle's place. And because I'm really nosy, and I will admit this, I went in too. And she might have thought I went in to make sure she didn't steal my credit card, but I actually went in because I was really nosy. And it was interesting because Maria and I had been driving by for a week, all these houses that were up on foundations and they were concrete foundations and, you know, didn't have glass windows. And we asked our friend, what's up with that? And he said, well, the country gives people land when they're trying to buy votes or whatever. But anyway, people got given land, but the deal was you had to improve on it. So they'll put up a foundation of that, but there's all these unfinished houses. He was not from Belize, by the way. So I go in this person's house and no, it was where they lived. So there was no windows. It was just like what we would consider an unfinished structure here in California. There was sheetrock on maybe one of the walls or half of one of the walls. And other than that, it was just plain concrete. Like we had poured a foundation and put a roof on it. And they didn't have the floor finished. There wasn't any like hardwood floors. There wasn't anything but the foundation. There wasn't any tile. And those may seem little things, but just stuff that you take for granted that once you have the foundation poured, you put wood on top of it or tile. And not everybody in the world does that because they don't have the money.
And that's a really good example, I think, of why it's important to get out of your bubble and why when you go and you travel, it's important to go not just to Atlantis in the Bahamas One of the things that I noticed in Belize, too, is they didn't have all those corporate entities that you have. So, you know, they didn't have a Starbucks in Belize. So you can't get one of those mugs that's like, I was in Starbucks, you know, Amsterdam or whatever.
There's no Hard Rock Belize City.
Exactly. But I think a lot of times people do that and they travel outside of their comfort zone and then they go to the Hilton and they eat at the Hard Rock and they get their coffee at Starbucks. But that's not really the world. Part of the reason I like traveling the world is you get to see what the world is outside of your bubble. And sometimes it's really depressing. But I think a lot of times when you get past, like, these people don't necessarily have the standard that I think that I would want in my life for, you know, things like internet access or number of shoes. I really like shoes. But when you get past that, you see how lucky you are and how much you have and how important it is, but also like how much you don't really need, you know, because like we come back from Belize and I'm kind of like, man, we have so much junk and you don't need 55 different types of soap. And maybe I don't need all that many of anything in my house, you know, and it kind of makes me want to just go through and like, you're constantly doing this at your house too, but get rid of a bunch of stuff. And, you know, my kids don't play with half of the toys they have. And I don't think that those things make us any happier. And I think people tend to forget that.
And sometimes we think, we're America. We are the best. We are the best. Everybody else sucks and should lay down before us. But sometimes there are things in other countries that I think, wow, Like the entire week we were in Belize, I did not hear one racist comment except by a couple of Americans that were sitting next to us. Did you?
No. And Belize is a very diverse country. I mean, they have black and white and indigenous. And no, I didn't see it. I didn't hear it. I didn't, you know, you don't go into certain neighborhoods where I noticed there was a huge demographic shift at all in any of the population. So no, and I'm sure every country has its things that they're really great at, but then people can say, well, turn around and say, well, yeah, you know, but no, I didn't see anything.
I didn't read about it in the newspaper. I didn't hear about it on the TV when we were at the schools and they were saying, oh, at this particular school, like 20% of the kids come from Guatemala. There was just like 20% of the kids come from Guatemala. Like, you know, 20% of our kids are in the third grade. We went to a different school and they talked about the number of kids that were immigrants from Guatemala. And yes, it was really an interesting contrast. And I think it's important for people to get out of their bubble, whether it's going to another country or just talking to people you don't normally talk to.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to go to another country. For example, we're both going to North Dakota next week, and that's certainly very much out of the bubble of what we live in here.
Well, and I am friends with people on Facebook or follow people on Twitter who are staunch Republicans. Now, I have a limit, all right? If you say that you thought it was okay that we put all the Japanese Americans in internment camps, then I'm going to unfriend you on Facebook because that's more crazy than I can put up with. But I do try to follow and friend and listen to some people who have different views than me. Even if I strongly, strongly disagree, I try to understand why is it that they think that.
Well, and in a lot of cases, I think you find that it comes from their backstory. You know, people's stories and where they come from shapes the perspective that they have. And so recognizing that, I think, can go a long way.
Well, I remember my friend Teresa when I was at Minot State. She was a professor there, too. And she was from South Carolina, I think. Yes, she was from the South. And she said, you know, she grew up in a state where her ancestors had been slaveholders and other kids in her school, their ancestors had been slaves. And she said, there was never a day when my mother sat me down and said, be afraid of black people. Don't trust black people. But she said it was the little things when we would be shopping in the store. And if there's a black woman nearby, my mom would, you know, take her purse out of the cart and hold it. Or she would pull me a little closer. So I think sometimes it is their backstory and even parts of their backstory maybe they don't remember. I mean, I think Teresa being a sociologist, probably that's why she grew up to be a sociologist, is she noticed those things.
Isn't there a word for it? Didn't you talk about that before when you were talking about carrying babies on the back and how Venezuelan people did that? And wasn't it like cultural history or learned something or other?
Oh, gosh, I'm trying to think. I think it came from Erickson. Race memory. That's what they call it. And they don't mean it's a memory that you have because of your race. It's like people who were Jewish and grew up and during World War II and had to run away and barely escaped with their lives, that has an impact on you. And even if you don't talk to your children about it, it's going to impact your view of the world. You know, people who went through the Armenian Holocaust or any kind of Holocaust, that it's going to make them more skeptical of outsiders because of what happened to them. And they kind of pass that on to their children, even if they don't tell them specifically why. You know, it would just be better if you married a Jewish girl, an Armenian boy, or whatever.
Hey, Jonah, you know what I love? Seven Generation Games.
I know, they're the best. I got them for all my nieces and nephews. They teach math and social studies. They love the games.
I wanted to get them for my niece in third grade, but she only has an iPad. I just wish they had an app.
But they do.
What?
Yes, Making Camp. It's the first app from Seven Generation Games, and it's out now in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store.
Wow, that's awesome. And they will still sell the other games too, right?
Yep, you can still get Spirit Lake, Fish Lake, and Forgotten Trail just by going to 7generationgames.com/buy to get them today.
And we're back with the remainder of this episode of More Than Ordinary, where we're talking about backstories. I'm Anne-Marie DeMars.
And I'm Marie Burns Ortiz.
And we're still brought to you by 7 Generation Games, games that make you smarter.
Speaking of games that make you smarter, we are going to give a shout out to Clint Weathers. I guess, are we using last names? Is that what we decided?
Clint is cool.
Why would he use his last name? Oh, you mean he's cool with us using it? Cool.
I assume so.
From Minneapolis, Minnesota, where he is also likely cold. Thanks so much, Clint. We think you're awesome.
And cold. So, speaking of backstories, I remember, again, when I was at Jamestown, North Dakota, and talking about how I had worked with kids in some inner city areas in Minneapolis and in Southern California, and how these kids from North Dakota didn't really understand what hardship was. And a friend of mine stopped me and she said, "You don't know that." She said, "I'm from a small town in North Dakota." And she had been abused as a child. And she said, in some places, sexual abuse is really pretty awful because you feel like you're in a small town and there's nobody you can tell. You know, the police chief knows whoever, because everybody knows everybody. But her point was, just because somebody comes from a small town or comes from a more affluent family doesn't mean they don't have horrible problems.
So you shouldn't be so quick to judge, was her point.
Yes. And I was reading a couple other books that both on different ends. I read Penny Marshall's book, My Mother Was Nuts.
Oh, that was going to be the title of my memoir, but I guess I got to find something new.
Yep, it's already taken. It's like I was going to call my book Winning on the Mat, and it was already taken. My friend Steve Scott wrote a book, Winning on the Mat, and I said, I was going to call my book that, and he goes, suck it. So, true friend for you. So mine's Winning on the Ground. But anyway, Penny Marshall's is My Mother Was Nuts, and it was a very interesting book just because her life was so different than mine. I mean, she grew up in New York City. She went to university, had her first child quite young when she was in school, and left her daughter with her mother-in-law. And her mother-in-law and her mom got joint custody. And, you know, she doesn't talk about that a whole lot. But for me, that's something that would never happen. You know, I would have gone with a gun and mowed down the city of Phoenix if that happened. So it's a good thing it didn't happen. But then she went off and she did really amazing things. And I did not realize this. I didn't realize that she had, you know, been one of the most successful women directors ever, probably one of the most successful directors ever. So that was interesting, you know, reading about how some of the real difficulties she had and, you know, the number of her friends that died. You know, her and I think John Belushi were pretty good friends and he died. And it seems to be a lot of people kill themselves in show business.
I don't know if it's a higher proportion or you just hear more about it, or maybe there are more names that jump out to you.
Yeah, maybe. But my point was, she had some real tragedies and she talked about those and, you know, getting divorced. And that was, I think, her divorce from Rob Reiner. She was quite sad about it. And so, yeah, it's easier to be sad if you have $100 million, maybe, but still.
But it doesn't mean you're not sad. And I think sometimes there's a lot of people, and people say that, especially say someone dies and they say, oh, well, they have, but I think there's a lot of times, like if it's someone's kid or their spouse or maybe even their parent, you know, I think people would say, well, they would give it all back. So this idea of, oh yeah, well, it's easy and it's not so bad for them because they have X amount of money or whatever. I think that overlooks a lot of the other things that money can't buy everything.
Well, and she talks about things like having an abortion or having a miscarriage. And I had a miscarriage and I don't think somebody came in and said, here's $5 million, that would have made it better. but it still sucked. So that was my point, is I never thought that much about her, except that she was on the Vernon Shirley, and reading her whole life story was really interesting. Another one I read was Irina's Children. Have you heard of Irina Sandler?
Not if I haven't, no.
Well, it's a really good book, and it's really worth reading. She saved 2,500 Jewish children in Poland.
Oh, maybe I did hear of this. It sounded, what did she do?
Well, she was kind of in charge of the welfare office, and she got a pass to like do epidemiology for something, because, you know, the situation in the ghetto was so terrible and the sanitation was so terrible that there were all kinds of medical outbreaks.
Oh, did she put them away, like send some of them out in coffins?
She might have. She did all kinds of things. They had tunnels. And so it was really interesting. First of all, I did not realize that a lot of the Jewish people during, at least in Poland, which was what I was talking about, they fought back. I mean, and they fought back like really, really bravely. So this was a story I'd never heard. And they dug tunnels to get from the ghetto into the Aryan area. And then there were a lot of people that helped them. And she was one of them. So they'd have these little kids and they would walk a really long way through the sewer system. And then they'd come out and, you know, if they were covered with muck and that, people would know. And so they'd come into her apartment and she'd scrub them down with soap. And they would come out the next day looking like, oh, here are these little kids walking to church. And they would teach them Catholic prayers. They wouldn't get caught. And lots of them got smuggled out to the countryside to the Catholic orphanages. And the nuns were in on it. Nuns are pretty badass if you look at them. And there were a lot of families that took them in. So when she was being honored by the State of Israel many, many years later, is like there's something of the righteous, I forget. But she said that she didn't feel right about it because there were so many people that helped her. And she gave them a list of like 14 pages of names. I mean, most of these people passed away. And many of them didn't talk about it for a long time because then the Soviets came into Poland and they weren't very friendly to the Jews either. But there were so many things amazing about the book. First of all, her and the number of people like her who smuggled kids out in every way to everywhere they could. And then these young teenage, I mean, these kids are like Julia's age or younger. And they fought block by block in the Jewish ghetto, and every one of them died in the end. But we get this idea that the Jews just kind of marched to the ovens, and that was not the case in Poland. So I'd never read any of this history. It was heartbreaking. And, you know, I just feel like, I think I'm pretty tough, right? And I read about some of these people, whether it was a mother who had four other kids, and she's 40 years old, and she's risking her entire family to hide out these young Jewish children or adults. And sometimes they got caught and they just lined them up and they shot the whole family from the baby on down. And how many people would do that? And in America, we like to think we're big and rough and tough, but I hear people all the time, well, I would speak out about this, right? But, you know, I have to think about my kids. And these people jeopardized their whole family and often died. Or, you know, Irina was tortured and she didn't give up a single name. But some people did. And she said, and if they did, no one judged them. It was just an amazing story.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I don't think I read the book, but I saw like one, or I know I didn't read the book, but I saw a video, I think, on about her recently, like a little, one of those little virally type videos from something on Facebook. We should look for it and share it. Or you should just buy the book because it sounds way better and deeper than anything you would see on it. But that made me think of it.
But the other thing that, again, talking about you can never judge good or bad people from just the outside, is the number of people in Poland who did nothing. That when, you know, these people were being bombed and their houses set on fire, just sat and watched. Like when they were fighting off the Germans, a lot of these Polish Jews thought that the other Poles would come to them too. And they put up like big signs in the ghetto saying, we're fighting for all of us, but they didn't. You know, so the people who were Polish that weren't Jewish, they were happy to see the Germans get killed, but they didn't help at all. So you always think, oh, I would be on the right side of history, but would you? And you know, it's easy to say, and I think it's hard to know.
Well, and I think a lot of times, like you said, it's hard to know. It's really easy to say. And I think a lot of times you look through examples throughout history and there's surprising examples on both sides. You know, there's a lot of examples of people that did nothing, but there's a lot of examples of people who no one would have ever expected to be the person who stood up and went out and fought, or who, you know, risked everything and then did it. You know, and I wish I had like a long list of names in my head that I could come up with, but sometimes you're just like, wow, I would never have seen that coming. You know, those type of people. So I think tragic or crisis situations bring out, I don't know if the best or the worst in people, but the way that people respond to those situations can surprise you for better or worse.
Well, I have a couple of examples. One was in the book. So Irina was a socialist. She was really left-leaning, and she had a lot of Jewish friends. And so when this all happened, you know, she just was ready. I mean, a great risk to her life and often terrified, but she was ready to dive in. But one of the other people who was really a big leader in this resistance movement and saving children was very anti-Semitic. She didn't like Jews. She thought they were all going to go to hell. She was ultra, the kind of people give Catholic a bad name, like ultra right-wing Catholic. But she believed in all those things in the Bible about, you know, thou shalt not kill, and that, you know, suffer the little children to come unto me and that. So even though she was not, didn't have any Jewish friends, would be considered anti-Semitic, she said, killing is wrong. The way these people are being treated is wrong. And I'm going to stand up. So there's an example. And I have another example. My friend, Dr. Martin Bregman, whose family actually came here to this country, I think, to escape from a lot of that. He is a referee in judo. This may sound kind of off topic, but he had the opportunity to referee in the Olympics, or he could have because he was rated at that level. But Martin made the choice that he is not the type to compromise on things. If he saw things going wrong, if he saw athletes mistreated, he would always speak up. And he was told that if you keep that attitude, you'll never referee in the Olympics. And he never did. He refereed in the World Championships. And he's one of the people I respect most of anybody I have met, because he really lived his convictions. And the corruption in sport never touched him.
Well, now I feel like a really unliterary, because I'm trying to think of all the books that I've read, but they kind of all blend into one in my head. Because I have small children. And I went through this phase, like, no, in the last 2 months, where I read a whole bunch of books. Like, I was going through like a book every couple of days. And now, obviously, I can't even remember what all of them are. But I read, what was it, Miss Peregrine's Home for
Peculiar Children.
Look at that. I can't even remember. I read all three of them, and I've got nothing. I know. But that's not really, I mean, I guess there's messages to that one, but they're like fictional. So I don't give them as much credit as people who are really fighting Nazis.
So that's it for this week's episode of More Than Ordinary. If you...
For the record, I do read a lot of books, and I am a well-read person.
And if you have the opportunity to fight Nazis, you should do that. And you should not be so judgmental about people like me, because you never know what their backstory is.
You mean people like you, like how you're judgmental, or judging people like you?
Both.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, 7generationgames.com. And that's 7 as in the number 7, generationgames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at 7generationgames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend, and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.